Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Joined once again on the Grand Old History Podcast by Celtic author and historian David Potter. David is also the author of Charlie Gallagher's biography, and what a player Charlie was, not only a Celtic great, but a Glasgow Irish great, who sadly passed away recently. And we'll be missed by all. And we were lucky enough to have both many conversations with Charlie, but you were also lucky enough to see him in the flesh playing. Something we never got. So thanks very much, David, for joining us for a chat. I've spent time in Charlie's company, as I says, an emotional interview done in Ballymena, when he spoke about being capped for Ireland, the first Glasgow player and the first non-Irish-born player to play for Celtic. And he was there along with his good friend John Fallon. And, you know, so as I said, I've had the pleasure of being in his company, and a lovely, you know, not only was he, you know, a great of Glasgow, a great of Celtic, but he was just a lovely person and very modest about his achievements in the game. You wrote the biography. You know, what was your impressions of Charlie, and you also seen him playing?
Well, just exactly what you're saying there, I think, because he was indeed a very modest man and a very quiet spoken man, by no means what you think of a professional football player. I mean, usually our professional football players, they're often a bit tough and a bit brusque and so on, but Charlie wasn't. He was he's a quiet spoken nice man, and you really possibly wouldn't even believe what a great football player he'd been, simply because he didn't really boast very much about himself at all, and he was just really a total gentleman. And in a way, that sort of reflected the way that he played the game, because he was always keen to avoid the hurly-burly of the game, you know, the hard tackles, things like that. That wasn't for him. And he was usually a good enough player and a skillful enough player to avoid all the hard tackles. And the way that he could pass a ball was just absolutely tremendous. He seemed to be able to almost curl the ball around the defender and find someone like Bobby Lennox. Bobby Lennox in particular, I seem to remember getting quite a lot of goals from Charlie, because, of course, Bobby Lennox needed the ball several yards ahead of him. Unlike Jimmy Johnson, who preferred it to his feet, Bobby Lennox needed it several yards ahead of him. And Charlie was able to read this. And Charlie was able to understand that, and as I say, he was just such a lovely player to watch. You could sit in a stand or stand in the terrace and just admire the way that he could get in position for a ball, and once he had the ball, he knew more or less exactly where he wanted to put it. And there are other things about him as well, of course. He didn't seem to be the fastest of player, but he had a good turn of speed as well. And of course, he could take corner kicks, the two famous ones. One against Vojvodina, and the one that started it all against Dunfermline in the Scottish Cup final of 1965. But in some ways, I think my favourite corner kick that Charlie Gallagher took was against Morton. One day, I think it was January the 25th, 1964, in a Scottish Cup game when Morton were running away with the second division championship. They were, you know, 20 points ahead of anybody else, and they were clearly coming up. They were a very good side under Hal Stewart, and Celtic in 1964 weren't all that great. They'd improved from recent years, but they still weren't all that great. And a cup tie, Morton versus Celtic, and a lot of people thought we were in for a real shock today, but we didn't. Celtic won 3-1, and there was a lovely corner kick that Charlie took. I think it was the middle goal. I think it was the second goal. Took it, and he scored direct from a corner kick. It was one of the few times in my life I've seen a goal scored direct from a corner kick. It was just deceived everybody, and of course it changed the game, and it won the game for Celtic. And of course, his other two corner kicks. Well, I think I can still envisage him yet trotting across to take that corner kick for the goal that McNeil scored. Funnily enough, as I've possibly said before, I've no clear recollection of the ball actually going into the net. But I do remember Charlie Gallagher taking the corner kick and a chap beside me saying, "Mack it a good yin, Charlie." I remember that very well. And then the next thing, of course, McNeil had scored. Some people thought it was Tommy Gemmell who'd scored, because from a distance we were away at the other end of the Hampden Terrace, which was a long, long way away. And I mean, vaguely the same colour of hair, so you could easily make a mistake. But of course, it was Billy McNeil. And then, of course, the one against Vojvodina I've watched, have been replayed on television several times as well, many times as well. And we're always grateful to Charlie Gallagher for that.
Yeah, and his family connection goes to Guido in County Donegal. His good friend, Charlie McGinley. And Charlie boasts that he had a junior Gaelic medal, which Charlie, Paddy Crerand or Aidan McGeady didn't, because their families come from Guido as well. So
they're
from the same street, which is amazing. Paddy Crerand, of course, another one of your favourite ever players and one who broke your heart. But, you know, and another European winner, a European Cup winner. When you, in your conversations with Charlie, because when I spoke to him for Guido, he was quite emotional. And I've spoke to his nephew, Gaxi, because his dad retired to Guido. So it was always very close to the heart. In any of your conversations, did he take you back to Donegal or the family?
Not many. When pushed, he would tell me about his family. But no, he was, I only really talked to him about football. And he talked to me about his early days in Glasgow junior football. I remember him saying to me once, once you've been in Glasgow junior football, you have no fear, because nothing can possibly happen to you that's not happening in Glasgow junior football. Although they tell me that Ayrshire junior football is worse. I don't know about that. But as a man who's refereed Angus junior football games in the past, I know it's pretty tough there. I mean, it's no place for softies, is junior football. And he told me about how he actually got on very well with Willie Waddle of Kilmarnock. He was an apprentice with Kilmarnock for a while when Willie Waddle of Ranger, ex-Rangers, was the manager of Kilmarnock. You know, he was on a sort of schoolboy apprentice thing, and he got on very well with Willie Waddle and thought very highly of him. But, of course, Celtic Park was the place that that he wanted to be.
Yeah, indeed, a garbles boy, and, you know, steeped in the Glasgow Irish. And I saw some lovely tweets when he passed away from people in Glasgow about, you know, how proud the Glasgow Irish were of him. Not only his achievements as Celtic, but the fact that, you know, he came home and pulled on the green jersey. The Garbles, David, it must have been a tough place to grow up, but it must have been, there must have been, his neighbours and that must have been so proud of him when he made his debut for Celtic.
Oh yes, I think they were. I think that the Garbles, of course, was always well known as very much a Celtic supporting area of Glasgow, and they always said, you know, when Celtic won something in the late 40s and early 50s, which wasn't all that often, but for example, the 1951 Scottish Cup and the Coronation Cup of 1953, there was dancing in the streets of the Garbles. And I mean, that was literally true. People would dance in the streets of the Gorbals, apparently, with people playing accordions and all sorts of musical instruments and so on. It was such an emotional thing for the Gorbals and for Celtic and for the Irish community in Glasgow.
Yeah, and I think if memory serves me right, I'm going to have to dig out the interview. I'm not even sure what issue it appeared in the fanzine, but I'm going to have to dig it out because I think he spoke about Celtic winning in Hampden and him running out as a child to greet the team coming through the Gorbals. So yes. I'm going to have to dig that one out because I can't see references for it elsewhere. And, you know, it's just a pity that every conversation, you had with the likes of Charlie and John Fallon, that you don't record them because you get some gems, even outside the Pills office, when they're holding court and, Jim McCalliog, ex-Man United, FA Cup winner. These boys are hanging around. And as well as that, you've also got Tommy Stevenson, Charlie McGinley, and a few others there. And they're just full of conversation. And they tell you about different away games over the years and different players and just a wealth of knowledge. Now, and I'm no spring chicken now. I'm in my 50th year. Well, my birthday's coming up soon, David. But I feel like a schoolboy when I'm in their company because I'm in awe of some of the stories they're telling me. And how well that they can get these stories across in without sounding like they're actually talking about themselves.
Yes, indeed.
Someone else.
It's part of the match day experience of Celtic Park, which I've missed very much these past 18 months, I must say. I think and I look forward to meeting some of them, although they're depleted now. I mean, there are people like John McLaughlin would turn up, and Charlie McGinley, as you say, and Jamie Fox, people like that. They're guys who I know well and who are, absolutely steeped in Celtic, far more so than even the likes of myself, who am from the east of Scotland. I'm not from Glasgow, so I'm not as steeped in Celtic as what I want to be, to be honest. That's what I want to be. But it's so great to listen to what they say. And I'll miss Charlie very much because Charlie, he would come along and he would never, if you asked him something, he would talk to you. And he was always glad to see you. And he asked how your family were and things like that. And he was a very sensitive soul. Apart from anything else, and of course, latterly when he wasn't well, I mean, we missed him quite a lot.
I've some lovely memories of Charlie. He attended one of our St. Margaret's dinner dances over in Ireland. I think it was him and John Fallon, and I'm not 100% sure if John Hartson was with him, but there was a more modern footballer there, and Charlie was just. I remember meeting him out, and there was a little wooded area, and he was there for a stroll, and I met him, and here I am on my own, with this famous person who's played for, my country and my club, and just to have moments like that, to remember him by, and the stories he was telling me, and more so, when you met him, he wasn't always talking football, he'd be asking a bit, as you say, how are you doing, and how's your body, and, Big Fallon's over there giving out. That was one of his lines. But and as I said, the interview in Ballymena he was quite emotional that night talking about his career, which was lovely to capture, and it was captured by pen and paper, which is a pity because we didn't have the recording equipment we have now that we can bring along and do at these things. But a lovely memory I have of him, David, is before I knew him. The fanzine had just started and I was selling outside the ground and he came up. He was driving a taxi at the time. He told me he was just parking his taxi. Didn't tell me who he was. I knew who he was. And he said, just trying to get the car parked. And it was a quid then for the fanzine, a pound. He took his pound out. He gave it to me. He was getting it for nothing, but he insisted on paying. Uh-huh. And then when he walked away, elderly gentleman came over and said, who that is? And I said, I think I do, yeah. And he said, that's the famous Charlie Gallagher. He says, keep that pound, And it was just lovely that a player of such stature would come up to a nobody, just a normal Joe Soap. Because he obviously thought, I can read that in the cab later now. And then within a couple of months, I'd met him at a function and we'd kept in contact, and he just was, you know, and I always felt, you know, for the Lions that didn't play in the final, that they were kind of excluded at times from, you know, that famous iconic image. And because, you know, if we had the one in Seville, I don't think anyone would have said that John Hansen wasn't part of that team. You know, it was his goals that got us there. And I just think, you know, like, I heard Gareth Southgate talking in the Euros the whole time about the squad and the players that weren't playing. And yeah, I just wish that John Fallon, Charlie Gallagher, Yogi Hughes, and all those great players, John McBride, that didn't play in that final in Lisbon, got the respect that I think they fully deserve.
Yes, indeed. Because, of course, it was Charlie played a large part in getting them to Lisbon. I mean, not least with the corner kick against Vojvodina, but he played in a few other games as well that season. And he put it this way, what stopped them getting in the team was Bertie Auld. But when Bertie Auld was injured or out, or Bertie got suspended now and again, and Charlie was in the team, there was no great difference to the team's performance. You know, they were just as good. And, of course, Charlie came very good in 1968, which in some ways is my favourite Celtic championship, when Bertie Auld was long-term injured from about February onwards. And Charlie came in the inside left position. And basically, Celtic were way behind Rangers in the league at that point. They'd lost they'd drawn against Rangers on January the 3rd, the time that John Fallon, unfortunately for John, let in two goals, which Celtic would have won. And Celtic didn't have to play Rangers again that season in the league. And so they were just dependent on other teams beating Rangers or Rangers cracking. And, of course, this is exactly what happened, because Celtic played inspired football that year. They played so well that Rangers you actually almost saw them beginning to crack when Celtic won their game after game after game. In particular, there were four away games, at which I was at all four of them. One was at St Johnstone. One was at Dundee United, one was at Hearts, and one was at Aberdeen. And these four grounds are very difficult ones to go to. And normally in any season, you would lose at least one game there, or you would draw a game perhaps in one of these four venues. But not this particular year, because they just played absolutely outstanding football. The game at Muirton Park against St Johnstone, one I think was a Monday night, if I remember correctly, for some reason. And they were just absolutely brilliant. And it was Charlie Gallagher who orchestrated it all. It was just sublime to watch Charlie that particular night. And St Johnstone, remember, in 1968, were no bad side. There was people like Henry Hall, and, of course, the following year they reached the final of the Scottish League Cup and so on. But that was just part of what 1968 was all about. And it was all about Charlie Gallagher's championship. And I think he deserves any amount of praise for that. And although you mustn't ever say, I don't like saying it was one man that won the league for us and so on, it is a team effort. Nevertheless, I'm quite happy on occasion to single out a player, and in particular Charlie Gallagher of 1968.
Yeah, there's a wonderful article, you know, about that, and we put it up on the website this week, so if any of the viewers want to go and read in detail about that season, it really is a great article. And there's also a long read up, a chapter from your book up on the website as well, and that's really well worth reading if anyone else wants to delve into a bit more about Charlie, especially if we've younger viewers or listeners. But there were so many career highlights for Charlie at Celtic, because, you know, he'd come in at a time when, you know, Celtic weren't the best, and then he was there for, you know, golden years, you know.
Yes.
And that's why we're paying tribute to Charlie, because that's, you know, the person he was, the player he was, and the time he played, his era was the most successful era in Celtic's history.
What I give him a lot of credit for as well is that he survived, and he used the word advisedly, he survived the bad days when Celtic were run by a man called Bob Kelly, the chairman, who, for all his admirable qualities in other respects, he knew very little about football tactics. he knew very little about actual football. You know, unlike Jock Stein, who clearly did, and that was all the difference when Jock Stein came along. But Bob Kelly was able to get his own way over Jimmy McGrory and suggest this and suggest this and thinking about with the teams and so on. And poor Charlie Gallagher, for example, played in the Scottish Cup final of 1961 on the wing. And he was not a winger. He was just simply not a winger. Willie Fernie played alongside him, and Willie Fernie was good, but Charlie Gallagher was just not a winger. He was a player, and I think we could all see that there was a future there someplace, but not on the wing. And then, of course, in 1962, 1963, things went from bad to worse. And 1964, he was beginning to come back again, Charlie. 1964-5, he had a few games as well. And he earned his place in the 1965 Scottish Cup final team against Inverness by a brilliant performance in the Scottish Cup semi-final replay one Wednesday night, 31st of March, if I remember correctly, against Motherwell. The team without Gallagher had played very badly on Saturday and had been lucky to get off with a 2-2 draw. And then Steen brought Charlie in for the replay, and he just took command. And Celtic won very comfortably 3-0 on the Wednesday night, and that was good enough to get them a place in the Scottish Cup final. But that particular spring, Steen's first spring, he kept playing about with the team, and you kept getting the lesson that if Gallagher was playing, Celtic played well. For example, they lost 4-2 to Hibs at Celtic Park, and then about a week later, maybe it was 2 weeks later, against the same opposition against Easter Road, they beat Hibs 4-0. And the difference was, of course, Charlie Gallagher. And Charlie Gallagher made all the difference, and he was picked for the Scottish misgivings about playing Bertie Auld and Charlie Gallagher in the same team on the grounds that they were very much the same player, as it were. And in fact, they had that particular game, they had three excellent midfield players in Bobby Murdoch, who was a right half, Charlie Gallagher and Bertie Auld, which left deficiencies elsewhere in the team. And apparently, Jock Stein said afterwards they'd had misgivings about having Gallagher and Auld in the team at the same time. But they were both good enough, and they both did very well to that particular day. And of course, that was the day which really changed things for Celtic in 1965. So I think we owe an awful lot to Charlie Gallagher in that respect.
Yeah, and as you said earlier on, the famous corner kicks, you know, there was like, They've been. I've seen them replayed on the internet this week and on social media. I think Celtic TV done a little tribute, and it was lovely to see the players wearing the black armbands in honor of Charlie, because you know he would have been humbled. Yeah. He would have been humbled because you know he wasn't. You know, him and Bertie were fighting for the jersey, but they were two different characters. Like you know, Bertie is you know, it kind of laps it up, whereas, you know, laps up the fame and so he should. But Charlie was kind of, I wouldn't say he was slightly embarrassed by the whole thing, but, you know, very seldom he would get up and speak.
Yes, indeed. Whereas the problem with Bertie Auld and John Fallon is getting them to stop speaking. I mean, there's no problem in getting Bertie to get them to speak. They'll both speak. I mean, they've both been to our dinners in our club in Kirkcaldy, and they've both held the floor for hours now when we're wanting on to something else, you know. Nobody had the courage to quite say that. But Charlie was so different. He was just like, as they kept saying about Jimmy Quinn and that long ago, he was just like an ordinary man. I mean, you would pass Charlie Gallagher in the street and just say he's just an ordinary Glasgow man. Whereas you would hear Bertie Auld saying, "I'm Bertie Auld and I played for Celtic." And you would certainly hear John Fallon saying, "I'm John Fallon and I played for Celtic." You know, you would be in his company for about 5 seconds before he managed to work it into conversation. But Bertie Auld, Charlie Gallagher, totally different man. And funnily enough, several times I went to Charlie's house, and his wife, Mary Rose, I think her name is, a fascinating character in her own right, because she used to be an opera singer. not in the professional stage, but in the amateur stage. She was an amateur singer. She was taking parts like, for example, Katisha in the Mikado. You know, the one on a tree by a river, a little song. That one, apparently she sang that one. So she was an amateur opera singer. Fascinating character in her own right. She was a lovely lady. She still is a lovely lady. And, of course, his daughter, Claire, is the headmistress of St. Modens High School in Stirling. So, I mean, the family has done very well for themselves. And I mean, apart from the fact that Charlie played for Celtic, there's a lot to be proud of and happy about in that family as well. A lovely family.
Yeah, and then it's so unusual to have, you know, like if you have one good footballer in a family, it's you know, it's good. But then if your first cousin from the, you know, living in the Garbles and from, you know, family from Guido, you know, both Celtic players, yeah, both in the team at the same time, and and both, you know,
yes,
Charlie, you know, featured in Celtic's run for the European Cup, and then I'm sure Paddy Creran thought, Jesus, what did I leave Celtic for? You know, I could have won a European Cup, but the following year he wins it with Manchester United. So it's amazing story about the family.
Of course, if Jock Steen had been the manager of Celtic, Pat Crerne would never have gone. Would never have gone. He would never have left Celtic. He would never have gone to Manchester United or anyone else in the world, I don't think, but if Jock Steen had been the manager.
And you wouldn't have been heartbroken.
I wouldn't have been quite so heartbroken, yes.
For anyone that hasn't heard David speak before, Paddy Crerne was, I think, his first Celtic hero. And he was devastated when he left the club. We said earlier on that we spoke about the Pools office and who holds court there. And I forgot to say, Jim Ward is there as well. Jim's great character. But I'd like to just... you know, pass on my deepest condolences to all Charlie's family. I've been in contact with Gagsy, who's his nephew, and he was just so proud of his uncle. And like Tommy Stevenson, was very good to Charlie, bringing him around and that. And of course, Charlie McGinley and Big John Fallon was, you know, the double act. You know, the quiet man and the not so quiet man. And then, and as I said, you know, Jim McCalliog, former Man United, you know, the man who scored the goal against England when Scotland unofficially became world champions, he put up a lovely tribute as well this week on social media to Charlie. So I think Charlie would be humble, David, but I'm going to leave the final word to you about Charlie. If you can just sum up Charlie from, you know, his career and his life.
I would say that in some ways, Charlie Gallagher is the microcosm of Celtic, in the sense that he's of Irish origins, as Celtic were, and after a struggle, he came good. Now, Charlie's struggle was, of course, in the early 60s, when the club was badly managed, when Charlie, a man of undoubted talent, didn't really get a chance to produce the talent simply because he kept being mucked about so much by horrendous and eccentric and bizarre team selections. But he stuck to it. 1963, when Charlie was not getting a place in the Celtic team, was when we lost 3-0 in a Scottish Cup final replay to Rangers, the time that the Celtic end evaporated after Rangers scored the third goal. 60,000 turned their backs on Celtic. Now, that was devastating enough for us. What must it have been like for Charlie Gallagher, a young player who wasn't even good enough to get into that team, apparently? But he stuck to it. He worked hard. He gradually found his way back. He was there when Jock Steen arrived. He eventually won over Jock Steen. Jock Steen, occasionally, you got the impression, Charlie thinks that Jock Steen didn't always like him. I don't know whether that's true or not, but he was certainly good enough to play his part in the Lisbon triumph, and certainly he played his part in the 1968 championship. He then actually disappeared almost immediately after that. It was almost as if that was meant to be Charlie's role in life, to win the championship for Celtic in 1968. And I certainly would never minimise the contribution that he's made to Celtic Football Club. But he also symbolises Celtic Football Club in another way. It's the kind, compassionate, loving part of Celtic Football Club. Now, I know there's some unpleasant things that have happened at the club. We know that. But there's also the other side as well, the nice side, the compassionate, the humanitarian side. And I think in many ways, Charlie Gallagher encapsulates that. I think Charlie Gallagher possibly deserves any place that anyone cares to give him in the pantheon of great Celtic players and great Celtic men.
Well, David, I'm going to leave the last word with you. Charlie, rest in peace.
Rest in peace, Charlie Gallagher. R.I.P.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.